nasty word, Laodicean?
L-A-O-D-I-C-E-A-N, Laodicean.
We have a champion.
The glittering pageantry of the National Spelling Bee. Is it a springboard to a letter-perfect life or a teenage agony best left behind? In the era of LOL and spell check, does Fergie need to know how to spell the word glamorous? G-L-A-M. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Friday, May 29th. I'm John Hockenberry, flying solo, although Femi's somewhere around here. Femi, okay?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm feeling a little Laodicean.
You know, glamorous was a four-letter word?
Not until this morning.
Coming up this hour, getting to know your Middle East peace talk players. We're going to take a look at the Palestinian president who was at the White House yesterday. Why couples stick it out during tough money times and then bail. We'll look at that. And the fame and fortune of a champion speller right here in our studio. All this and more. But first, some headlines. And in the headlines, another big day for the auto industry. General Motors board meets today as the company tries to score whatever concessions it can ahead of Monday's deadline for restructuring or bankruptcy. Union employees finish voting today on a deal to cut benefits. Here's retired GM worker Howard Squires.
I never thought General Motors would get to that point. A year ago, if you'd said General Motors was going into bankruptcy, I would have said you're full of it.
A block of GM's biggest bondholders took a deal yesterday that wipes out $27 billion in debt in exchange for stock. Under the new plan, the U.S. Treasury could end up owning more than 70% of GM stock. Meanwhile, Fiat walked out of a second round of talks with German officials, stay with me here now, to try to salvage GM's European operations. Yes, the Fiat talks are important to keeping GM out of bankruptcy. Magna, the Canadian car maker, is still in the running for the German GM operations. And Chrysler heads into another day of bankruptcy court this morning after a marathon session that ended just before midnight. If the hearings on whether it's a fair deal for Chrysler and its stakeholders to sell most of the company to Fiat don't wrap up by June 15th, Fiat could be out of that plan, too. Femi Okay is here. Are you driving a Fiat this morning?
Not this morning,
driving
actually.
Driving the headlines, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, everybody, again. President Obama heads to Egypt next week to continue his Middle East peace talks, where he says that he'll try to improve U.S. relations with the Muslim world.
I want to emphasize the importance of Muslim Americans in the United States and the tremendous contributions they make.
So while meeting with his Palestinian counterpart yesterday, the president's peace talks hit a snag when Israel rejected calls to stop building settlements in the occupied West Bank. Overseas, North Korea threatened what it's calling self-defense measures if provoked by the UN Security Council. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates said yesterday that he won't send more troops to the region and that it's not a crisis. And we have the first tropical depression of the hurricane season. We'll be watching that as it crosses the Atlantic, John.
And the S&P starts trading at 9.07 after a bump up yesterday. We're going to be talking about how divorce rates are down in this economy, but it seems to be because people who might be getting a divorce are postponing their decisions because of the recession. What are you postponing? Putting off going back to school or going back to school and putting off something else? Tell us your story at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Recession postponement on The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. Responsibilityproject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here in the Takeaway Studios in New York City. And we are talking about a couple of things that I want to remind you about. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about what happens to divorce rates in the times of economic stress. They actually go down, but it's not necessarily good news. It means people are postponing hard decisions in times of recession. Are you doing that? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Also, National Spelling Bee champion was named last night. Laodicean was the word. It means indifference to religion or politics. Nobody listening to this program is indifferent. There are no Laodiceans Laodiceans listening to this program, but tell us a word that trips you up in your life, all right? 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. Spelling, pronunciation, or otherwise. I have all kinds of pronunciation problems on this show. Lots of words trip me up. Share yours at 877-8-MY-TAKE. So last week it was the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Yesterday it was Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas at the White House. Comes days after Hillary Clinton made this demand on Israeli settlement policy.
The president was very clear when Prime Minister Netanyahu was here. He wants to see a stop to settlements, not some settlements, not outposts, not natural growth exceptions. We think it is in the best interests of the effort that we are engaged in that settlement expansion cease.
Freezing settlements or rolling back settlements is an issue of key importance to Mahmoud Abbas, who represents the Palestinian faction Fatah and presumes to speak for all Palestinians, but of course not for the Hamas faction in Gaza, which controls the territory of Gaza. But the settlements are really an issue for the West Bank, and joining us to discuss this issue and how important it is to the Palestinian president is Daniel Levy, co-director of the Middle East Task Force at the New American Foundation. He joins us from Tel Aviv. And Ali Makboul, BBC reporter, joins us from Ramallah. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, John.
So, Daniel, let me begin with you. Benjamin Netanyahu, was perceived coming into the White House last week at a moment of domestic weakness in Israel. It's fair to say that Mahmoud Abbas, while certainly the only speaker for the Palestinians, really, he has no rivals, but he's not perceived as terribly strong. Both meeting arguably the most popular leader in the world right now in Barack Obama. Assess, Daniel, the sort of power and credibility of Netanyahu and Abbas if they're going to be the principal players in trying to make progress on peace.
Well, I think that's right, John. I think the most important thing that both of those leaders, Netanyahu and Abbas, heard from the American president was an articulation of Israeli-Palestinian peace and a two-state solution as an American interest. And that's what I think they were listening to and will be most attentive to. The fact that you have a popular American president saying, yep, we care about the Palestinians, we certainly care about our long-term friend and ally Israel, but listen to me, this is an American interest. It affects America's national security and America's position on the Middle East. He said that as far as he's concerned, it's also an interest of Israel and an interest of the Palestinians. But first and foremost, this is about what America needs to see happening. Benjamin Netanyahu comes with a relatively stable coalition, but with a situation in which he's attempted to repackage rather old and stale goods and resell them to the Americans. The idea that you can continue building settlements while having a credible peace process, that apparently didn't wash with the new administration. The Bush administration had exactly the same demand of a settlement freeze, but they never pursued it in a credible way. It seems that the Obama administration will pursue it in a credible way. Abbas faces a far more tricky domestic political situation. And in that respect, I think yesterday was somewhat problematic. Neither President Abbas nor President Obama mentioned the word Gaza at all.
Right.
And this is very problematic. It's an abandonment. It's not about Hamas only. It's about the 1.4 million civilians there, and I think they would have felt rather abandoned and questioned whether Abbas really relates to them and he's their president at all.
Right. Well, Ali Makboul from the BBC, our partners there in Ramallah, is this an attempt, do you think, by the Obama administration to carve off the settlement issue as a huge kind of quid pro quo for the people of the West Bank and kind of deal with Gaza later? And if so, is that going to be offensive to the Palestinians in Ramallah?
Yes, and I think a lot of Palestinians here have been looking at what happened in Washington, certainly liking the language coming from the White House in terms of settlements, but thinking that perhaps President Abbas got off quite lightly because there was no criticism of him publicly of the fact that he hasn't been able to bring the two sides back together. Really now, Hamas and Fatah are as far apart as they have been. There are talks that are supposed to be going on in Egypt. Really, frankly, they're coming to nothing at the moment. and we have this situation where Hamas is in charge of the Gaza Strip, and Mahmoud Abbas doesn't speak for those people there. So a lot of people were hoping that perhaps President Obama would push things in the right direction in terms of Palestinian unity, perhaps level some criticism at Mahmoud Abbas for not being able to achieve that. But instead, President Obama, in fact, praised what he said was President Abbas's principled stance in saying that he wouldn't accept Hamas in a new government unless they accepted certain principles. And that is a real sticking point. So a lot of people were hoping for a little bit more. But on the other hand, President Abbas will be walking away from the White House really quite pleased with himself, hearing all the things that he wanted to hear, very strong terms in terms of condemnation of settlement building, and also pushing much harder as this administration has been doing for that two-state solution.
Well, Ali Makbul, and then I want to get Daniel Levy's response to this as well. I mean, do you sense that there's a strategy shift here, that they're trying in the Obama administration to deal separately with the Palestinians in the West Bank and the Palestinians in Gaza? And do Palestinians actually believe that Obama can deliver on this settlement expansion moratorium that was talked about at the White House? Aleem first and then Daniel.
Well, of course, the White House is not saying that it's something that it's going to be able to achieve, to deal just with the West Bank. And I think, in fact, from what we've heard from George Mitchell here, the envoy, that he does appreciate that it's not something that's viable to just deal with one part of the Palestinian territories and have some kind of viable agreement at the end of that. But achieving that unity is something that has puzzled everyone in the region, not just the Americans, not just the Palestinians, but the Egyptians too. But there, it is quite clear, I've got to say, that from the Egyptian point of view, they would like to sort of edge out Hamas, but it's just not proving to be possible. Hamas has still got the tightest grip it's had on the Gaza Strip while it's been in charge.
Daniel Levy, what's your assessment of deliverability of this settlement expansion moratorium idea?
This has become a central question, as you well know, John, for Israelis, for the broad Israeli public. The relationship with the United States is so important, is so essential to Israel, is something so appreciated by Israelis. Israelis don't like to see differences, don't like to see a sense of clash with an American administration. And here's the smart thing about focusing on a settlement freeze. A settlement freeze, of course, is necessary because the situation in the territories is making a two-state solution almost impossible. When the peace process began in 1993, there were 111,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank only. Today, that number is 290,000. That's dramatic. So it's important if you're ever going to have a two-state solution. But it's also important because this is one issue where if you ask the majority of Israelis, they will say to their own prime minister, why are you endangering our relationship with the United States over settlements? The majority of Israelis do not support settlements. So it's a very smart wedge issue for the Obama administration to push hard on. My own sense is that you won't get a settlement freeze. Israel will continue to try, unfortunately, and find different ways to wriggle out of this. And then the Obama administration is going to have to decide what to do next, how it expresses its displeasure, but crucially, how it actually drives through to get to that two-state solution and implement that two-state solution. So I think this is the first act.
All right, well, Daniel, let me just ask you, we've got less than a minute, Daniel. Doesn't Netanyahu have some electoral sensitivity? I mean, if they put a moratorium on expansion in a place like Ariel, a settlement that's not far from Tel Aviv but technically in the West Bank, doesn't Netanyahu lose, you know, thousands and thousands of Likud voters, like, right off the bat?
It depends what the consequences are for not doing it. Ariel is a long way from Tel Aviv. It's halfway to the border with Jordan, actually, in the West Bank.
But there are plenty of commuters there. Let me just get a final word from Aleem Makbul. What's the next step on Hamas, do you believe, Aleem?
Well, I mean, they seem to, there have been more diplomatic moves, more politicians visiting the Gaza Strip, and they certainly want to be taken seriously as a political force. And I think a lot of people are saying, taking the pragmatic view, that is the only course of action.
And that's the next act. What happens with Hamas? Aleem Makbul and Daniel Levy, thanks so much for being with us.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.